Blockchains is changing economies and the global business community. How can businesses best prepare for the emerging future of blockchain? What is blockchain economies, and what mindset must business leaders adapt to a successful participation in the blockchain future? Welcome to ITU Espresso and our studio here at the IT University in Copenhagen, where we set forth relevant research findings and pass on useful advice to leaders of digital innovation across industries and sectors. With me today, I have Professor and Head of the European Blockchain Center, Roman Bech. Very warm welcome to you, Roman. It's a pleasure to have you. Now, the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a lot of talk about blockchain, but still I found not so much understanding, perhaps. So what is the philosophy behind blockchain?
It's a very good question, and it's a very important one, because obviously kind of the ability to create value in networks in inter-organizational settings, that means kind of independent from a market maker or a trusted agent, is something that is enabled by blockchain, or more generally speaking, distributed ledger technologies. And for that, you know, kind of moving into value creation in networks, that is something that is sort of different from the traditional way of doing it in a more centralized way.
So actually, it is, you can see it for it's small blocks. Like this, when you talk about it.
Blockchain, as the name indicates, is a bunch of transactions that are formed into blocks and that are connected to previous bunch of transactions of previous blocks. And as they are connected, it's not just that the individual transaction is secured, but also because they are kind of chained, you know, all the transactions are getting more and more secure, if you will, as the chain is going to be longer. So that is one of the elements of blockchain.
So as a business journalist and finance journalist, I often find when you talk blockchain, you also talk about cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. And often these two things get kind of mixed up. So what is blockchain besides from a distribution ledger for cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. Well, sadly, this is often reduced to cryptocurrencies, as people kind of course, know about Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And that is most prominently also kind of reported in media. But the underlying technology that is enabling cryptocurrencies, as well as any other business logic that can be coded and put on as a piece of software on chain, can also be supported by blockchain. And therefore, the technology is not just enabling cryptocurrencies or stable coins and central bank digital currencies, all these things from the monetary space, but also something like tracking and tracing of products and services, guarantee of origin, everywhere where kind of you need trust in the product, as well as the handling of the product or services that are autonomously generated by machines for us.
So where is blockchain? In what sectors, industries are blockchain used today?
Well, it started in the financial services industry with Bitcoin and kind of the revolution around that, where the banks and insurance companies were starting to look into how that is changing their business models towards more transparent, towards more generation of value in networks, business models. Then it went into the supply chain industry and logistics. We see a lot of initiatives, large international initiatives around the bill of lading, as well as trade finance, where a lot of documents are handled and a lot of kind of partners are involved, yet there is kind of a manual information flow, there is misunderstanding, there's all kinds of things that can happen in cross-border transactions. So in the supply chain industry, in logistics, that is kind of playing an important role. But more recently, you see tremendous developments in gaming, e-gaming, as well as arts, digital arts, NFT art, which is kind of gaining a rapid kind of increase and also attract a lot of investors.
When we talked prior to this interview, Roman, I was talking a lot about gamification and gaming.
Yes.
And said, no, Pernille, don't go, don't mention the word gamification. Why is that?
Well, we talked about, you know, kind of how blockchain is going to change incentive structures and how market engineering or kind of re-engineering of incentive structures play a vital role in creating these autonomous systems based on blockchain. And if you use the word gamification, you may put people on the wrong track. You know, people hear games, and then they may stop listening because, you know, it seems like a not-so-serious business. So that's the reason why gamification, the essence of gamification, like nudging, making it relatively easy to see kind of the value proposition of using it. That makes a lot of sense, but the term gamification, and now we talk about it, is actually kind of sometimes a bit misleading.
So actually it's a bit of a revolution, not in gamification, but the structure in how we approach customers or not a change in the business environment.
Well, when you talk about like an end-to-end optimization of value chains, then you have more or less kind of different stakeholders that are not necessarily involved here in a friendly way, or they have an incentive of hiding information, kind of asymmetric information distribution. But in order to optimize this globally, kind of the welfare of the whole system, you have a system, you need to have a system in place that is creating incentive structures, payoff metrics for everyone involved, which is positive, and sometimes you have to re-engineer that payoff metrics as previously it was beneficial to hide information or to kind of slow down the process, and now you get reimbursed, you get positive kind of revenue streams by complying to the system as it is now operating on blockchain. And that kind of focus on incentive structures, mechanism design, and nudging behaviors actually to create improved value chains is a significant difference to, let's say, ordinary digitization of processes. Because now you can enforce business logic and incentive structures, and you can prolongate them through the network.
Just kind of blockchain was kind of started in financial sectors, and now it has moved on to the shipping industry.
Yeah.
Maersk is talking a lot about it because you can. It's not all about money; it's information that you can trace and make visible. And also, I think in medical care, is it where you have to like Novo or Christian Hansen? Or
well, if we go through all the industries, we don't have enough time to do that. But kind of if you think about kind of what blockchain is doing, it is kind of enforcing coordination mechanisms.
Yes.
So where the internet was a platform for sharing information as a communication platform, it failed to actually enforce your rights, your kind of ownership, your execution of what you wanted to see fulfilled, as it is not a coordination platform. Now, blockchain seems to become the underlying network, if you will, that is enforcing coordination and contracts as agreed upon. So it is sort of complementing where the internet fails. And if you think about how tremendously the internet has an effect on all parts of society and different industries, now you can imagine if blockchain is becoming part of that internet, how many kind of industries will be affected by blockchain.
And that's why you call it a social innovation, blockchain.
I call it actually a technology that is kind of affecting not just industries, but us as citizens, as human beings. And then we grew up in this understanding that in order to be part of that digital environment, in order to be part of the internet and the modern life, we have to give away data. You know, where we walk and talk, we drop data, and that is the price to pay. And we sort of bought into that argument. But you can design systems, I'm coming back to gamification, mechanism design and incentive structures, where you can actually stay in control of your data while you still can coordinate and work together with others. So it's not just something that is of interest for industries, but it's kind of quite basic and fundamental for citizens to stay in control of your digital personas, if you will.
So and you believe in that?
I believe in the transformatory kind of power and the catalytic effect, let's say, in the light of distributed ledger technologies. We see a lot of kind of new discussions and innovations taking place that are not necessarily kind of including DLT systems. But in the light of DLT systems, kind of industries, supply chains, associations, they think about, now you can do this decentralization thing. Some of those elements and ideas are quite useful, but can also be achieved with more traditional technologies. But of course, also you see kind of blockchain innovation kind of with the use of blockchain.
And that is how the conversation has, you have been a part of the blockchain conversation for many years. So how has it changed the past 2 years?
Well, obviously it started with Bitcoin. And when you talked about Bitcoin, people said this is for criminals, this is used for shady business. We are a respected institution. You know, when you talk in the banking industry about Bitcoin, that was around 2014, 2015. The rhetoric was, no, this is a different ballpark. You know, we are regulated and we can't have anything
and
in common.
That was 2 years ago. That's different today.
Yeah, you know, but kind of this thinking is kind of quite persistent, and you see this still around. You know, you still have kind of sometimes discussions where you think, that is a discussion I had in 2015. That is one of the reasons why it is so important to have a place where knowledge is created and knowledge is disseminated, because that field is kind of developing rapidly. And when we talk about blockchain, people were thinking about Bitcoin. Now we talk about distributed ledger technologies. People think about blockchain. So the terminology and the development is faster than actually the information is kind of disseminating in the debate. And that is important to kind of be close to the forefront, because the dynamics in other places in the world are quite significant.
And what fascinates you the most with blockchain technology?
It is actually a way of kind of giving control back to the involved people or companies. There's a reason why it was kind of created, the Bitcoin or the underlying technology blockchain, as a response to the financial crisis, where someone or somebody believed, you know, there is a need for an alternative way of creating and disseminating, allocating value in society. And that is fundamentally a possibility here. So the possibility to develop a digital mindset that allows you to generate value in decentralized networks is something which is fundamentally new, not new in the way of kind of that you were able to imagine this before, but now you can execute it.
So do you see blockchain as a part of a sustainable future?
Obviously, when we talk about blockchain, my blockchain bingo questions, you know, what is happening when the quantum computer comes? What is about sustainability? Isn't that burning so much energy? Isn't that just for criminals? You know, these questions are all justified and important, but sustainability is actually more than just ecologic sustainability. It's also about the sustainability of societal values and the longevity, the lifespan of business models. Increasingly, citizens will not, or consumers will not, buy into a business model that is not sustainable in terms of, we may have wonderful clothes here, but the price is kind of slave work in other regions of the world. So this is not a sustainable business model. Sustainability kind of therefore is kind of two things. The technology needs to be operated in a sustainable way. And a lot of DLT systems do not build upon the consensus mechanism known as proof of work, which is the energy-intense one. There's a gazillion of other consensus mechanisms. So there are sustainable, if you will, sustainable DLT systems around. And secondly, kind of blockchain can help to coordinate cross-border in an international way to actually meet, for example, the Paris Agreement on kind of protecting the climate. We have been involved in projects to look into, for example, how you can meter and subsequently reduce CO2 emissions of cars on European roads, where you keep the individual member states in control of the data, so they stay sovereign about the information that is generated, while network-wide, European-wide, a blockchain solution is enforcing that actually ultimately CO2 is kind of avoided or is kind of not emitted. That is something that can be done in a federated way where members stay independent, and that is the important part. You know, you don't hand in, you know, your keys to the house or your information to a central market maker, while at the same time you can coordinate and actually can act on an international or global level to meet quite significant grand challenges of mankind. And you see a lot of kind of blockchain for good initiatives kind of going into that direction.
This is one of the long-term outlook doing blockchain business. Are there others that you would like to pinpoint?
Well, we just had a blockchain business bridge boot camp where we looked into developments in China together with companies here in Denmark. And as in many other places, so here in blockchain, China is kind of pushing full force into that direction because they see business opportunity. And as mentioned already, kind of, for example, NFT art, you know, kind of non-fungible tokens where you can tokenize either digital art or you tokenize some painting in the physical world.
Kind of China has a digital yuan already.
Yes, they work currency on the crypto yuan. Yeah. That's right. Kind of on different levels, and they're pushing for that. The People's Bank of China is very active for many years, and they did this openly, so everybody who wanted to see it was able to read about. Mm-hmm. And the understanding from the People's Bank of China was for a long time something like, the future of fiat is crypto. So it is like a natural progression of the current monetary system.
We have a digital euro.
Towards the next one, right?
Yeah.
So and it allows you to have like colored coins where the coin is aware for what it is spent, right? And for example, taxes could be automatically subtracted from that transaction.
But you had this workshop, a bridge between China and Denmark.
Yes.
What does Denmark have to offer when we talk about blockchain technology compared to China?
Yeah. So first of all, kind of Europe and China are pretty much at the forefront of developments. Not so much, maybe to a certain surprise, you know, not the US. Here in Denmark, we are working on kind of a couple of things simultaneously for many years. Many don't know that kind of we have a company here in Denmark that is kind of doing universal wallets, that is sort of the browser to enter not just your keys to operate on blockchains, but also to kind of control your digital persona. A company around that is doing this for 10 years. We have a lot of companies kind of at the leading end of on-ledger data analytics. And a lot of kind of in this emerging blockchain industry cluster innovation that takes place here, which is the reason why also summer schools and courses, part-time master programs are actually quite attractive for people from at least all over Europe.
And why are you at Copenhagen IT University?
Well, because the opportunities to work on blockchain, it didn't come because of blockchain, but the digital mindset allows you to kind of think differently, work on different business models, and have faster access and find the same language with people who have similar interests and similar understanding. And that allows us to do research that might be not as easy to be rolled out in other places.
And we're talking about mindset, and also I said in my intro, how does blockchain challenge the mindset of leaders? How to prepare themselves? What does it take? Is it a complete change of the road ahead, or how do we adapt to this?
This is a good question because you kind of if you think from a strategy and leadership point of view, you know, how do you interact with or how do you engage with blockchain? Then of course you can position your company, your organization as something like a consumer or part of the network, kind of using certain services, or you're actually operating on ledger. You know, you're either at the receiving end or you're one of the operators of a blockchain environment. And that requires that you actually have this inter-organizational mindfulness mindset. You know, this is a lot of words kind of, you need to think a system and a process from end to end, and you need to kind of make sure that you are seeing how you can create value in networks. Now, traditionally, kind of how companies are working or how business models are operating is you have an innovation, you have some invention, you produce that, you kind of are in control of that, and you sell it. You know, kind of typically this is some private good, like the mark here or the bottle of water, and then you bring this to the market. When it comes to blockchain services or blockchain goods, then we have something like club goods or public goods, where traditionally there was no market for companies to operate because you couldn't enforce that those who are benefiting from that service are actually paying. So now we have technology that allows you to create solutions, services in networks that have network effect characteristics, public good characteristics, but now you can have a little revenue stream underneath, and that is fundamentally different from like business models in the past.
So last question, I'm sorry, but where in the organization should you place blockchain in innovation? Is that where? Is it up here or here?
Well, often now we are talking about sustainable autonomous systems, kind of with the what is called power of three, IoT, blockchain, and AI. Those three technologies combined will kind of lead to autonomous systems. And then there's another P, the 3P, kind of people, planet, profit. That is the sustainability
perhaps
goal.
Perhaps purpose also.
Well, that is a standing term, but of course kind of there should be some underlying purpose in everything we are doing.
Yeah.
So if you will, something like 3P3, kind of power of three for autonomous systems with a 3P of sustainability. That is where kind of the future is going into, and where a lot of activities are actually rolled out as we speak.
Roman, it was a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
I could use 20 more minutes, but maybe some other time. Thank you for joining us. And this was our fourth ITU Expresso talk where we explore the possibility, the challenges and trends that comes with digitalization. You can join us again on the 25th of October, where Associated Professor Christian Østergaard will visit me here in the studio, and you can find more about the ITU talks at the ITU Expresso landing page. Thank you for joining us, and see you around.